But today is VE Day. The war is
the
over.
The newly crowned queen waves from the balcony.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has landed.
Tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Capital at risk.
Hi everyone and welcome back to The Wealth Show. I'm Zach, a senior reporter at Citywire Wealth Manager. I'm joined today by fellow reporter Natalia Vasnier, and today we're looking ahead to UK equities in 2025. Joining us today is David Cummings, head of UK equities at Newton Investment Management. Hi, how are you?
Fine.
Thank you so much for joining us. I hope this is your first podcast of the year.
First podcast of the year. Wonderful. Probably the last.
David, we want to kind of preview, you know, what's in store. I mean, Obviously, we're 6 months into the sort of UK Labour government and weeks away from Donald Trump at time of recording being inaugurated as a second term. Yeah. You know, we could be in for a roller coaster. How do you see the UK equity market over the next 12 months?
So I think one of the things to say, UK equity market is a global market. So if you're buying UK stocks, most of the earnings now come from outside the UK. So you have to dissociate a little bit UK market in terms of economy and look at the global. But in that sort of context, the UK equity market is relatively cheap on a sort of price to earnings ratio relative to history. It's very cheap relative to the US. I mean, this is not a surprise, but this US exceptionalism people talk about. So UK tend to trade around 12, 13 times PE. It's trading on about 11 and a half. The US tended to trade around 15, 16. It's on 23. So you've got this big gap. So I think everyone recognizes the UK market's cheap. And then things are getting a little bit better in terms of interest rates have come down. Inflation's more subdued than it was this time last year. So that's getting better. And the US, Europe, although we've gone through a period of sort of low growth, in theory, things should get a little bit better this year. So if that materializes and China does a bit of stimulus, Trump doesn't do anything too dramatic on tariffs, et cetera, which you will have to wait and see, then I think things should get a bit better. And given the UK market's cheap and unloved, then there are a few catalysts like lower rates, global growth picking up, M&A, which is picking up in the UK more because it's cheap, more people are bidding for UK stocks. The market should make a bit of progress. So there are reasons to be cheerful in what feels like a subdued market at the moment.
Absolutely. And you were talking about how there's been a lot of M&A in the UK equity market. There've been also a lot of buyback of shares, low valuation. So do you think like kind of that trend of UK as the unloved market that's been for so many years now, do you think that's going to change now? And maybe making a point like the like the Labour government that just came into power, do you think that has helped it or make a difference?
Well, the UK has been unloved for quite a long time. So laws of probability, things get better at some point, whether this is the year. But I think the UK economy should get a little bit better. And because the market's cheap and you get more M&A, that should start to drive the market a little bit. And there are risks. The Labour government, politicians, except maybe the US, politicians in general are less important than markets think or people think. So obviously the UK have done a little bit in terms of tax, national insurance, spending, which the market hasn't really liked. Now we'll just have to see how that pans out. But I think what happens globally, what happens in the US, how things pick up in Europe are probably more important. So I think the labour risk, you know, the reset at the budget, that's probably happened. And now it's really a focus what's happening in the US, what's happening in China. And hopefully that is a little bit better than people think. So I wouldn't worry too much about domestic politics.
Okay. On not taking domestic policy too seriously, at risk of taking it too seriously, do you think then a sort of market reaction to Rachel Reeves' budget, for example, and the outlook for the next 4 years of Labour government, do you think that's been priced in now?
I think at the very short term, as I sort of speak, the market's a little bit nervous around the gilt market because we've had a bit of a chat around headroom and all that sort of thing. So gilt yields have moved up a bit. That's been a bit of a constraint. I think that's a bit of an overreaction. So if you look at our budget deficit, debt to GDP. It's not that different from other major G7 economies. So I'm not too worried about that. I think it has been overpriced in a little bit, actually. So the market's a bit too nervous about bond yields going up, about more taxes coming through. So I think as people calm down, and also as we get through Jan 20th with Trump, when he gets inaugurated, I think hopefully the sort of concerns we're seeing currently diminishes a little bit.
And what do you think equity investors should be looking for, must focus on over the next year? Is there any specific sectors that you think are going to perform better than others?
Yeah, so it's because I'm slightly more constructive about the economy globally. I mean, there's a lot to worry about, but a lot of those worries have been priced in. So economy-sensitive stocks relative to tech, which is the AI stuff, and defensive stocks, I quite like, because they're lowly valued. And if things get a little bit better, there's quite a lot of scope for these stocks to pick up. So things like auto, financials we like. I mean, they've done quite well recently, but we still like banks, for example. Real estate, which is being hurt a little bit by bond yields currently, that looks quite cheap. Some industrial, some consumer discretionary. So that sort of economy-sensitive budget relative to consumer staples, more defensive areas, utilities, telcos. I think because I'm slightly optimistic, I wouldn't say very optimistic, I think those areas are a little bit more attractive. And the market's still quite negative in how those stocks are valued. I mean, I run an income fund, so I can see quite a lot of income, low P's in those sort of sectors where I think prospects are better than the market thinks.
Mm-hmm. And it'll be interesting to see your perspective on, because you're quite more optimistic slightly.
Yeah, I don't. People know me think I'm not that optimistic, actually, but I'm slightly optimistic.
But obviously, you know, we always see fluctuations in investor confidence.
Yeah.
And the end client might not be so optimistic.
Yeah.
I'm just interested to see how you see that in terms of relationship management with sort of end clients and, you know, soothing those concerns.
Yeah, I suppose clients tend to worry about macro. Where we add value mostly is direct company contact, taking views against consensus of what the management's doing. I spend most of my time seeing companies one-to-one and asking that. Clients tend to be a little bit more macro, geopolitical, et cetera. So you talk a little bit more about Trump and gilts and all that sort of stuff, and less specifics around companies. But obviously those things are important too. So we have a view on the macro and a view on the micro. But for a fund manager like me, I've got a better, superior information flow at the micro level and at the stock level, because I see these companies face to face, whereas the Fed aren't going to tell me what they're going to do on rates, etc. I still need to have a view on that, but my intellectual focus is more at the company level, and clients are a little bit more macro.
And we talk to a lot of wealth managers daily, and they kind of see there's a move towards UK small cap and mid cap sector. Is that something that you also believe?
I don't see that. I mean, flows, UK is definitely cheap and very unloved. So a lot of clients ask us when is people going to actually like the UK again. So that's a feature. But I mean, mid cap doesn't look expensive and has been underperforming for a while. Mm-hmm. I don't invest in small cap because it's too liquid. I don't sense a big rush to buy small and mid cap from clients currently. I think we've got the UK first. After that, maybe they'll start looking at the smaller cap stocks. But at the moment, I think weightings in the UK are at rock bottom. Mm. You know, UK is the only country where we're actually underweight our own markets.
Yeah.
So in a technical position, that's a good thing because you're coming from a low level. But there's definitely scope for the client, at least, to be more optimistic than they are, because AI, the US, S&P 500 is the dominant theme and momentum's a big driver. I'm not a momentum investor, so I tend to try and stand back from that trend.
And how long do you think the UK equity market will remain unloved in the state that it's in?
Well, hopefully this year will be the change. I do think this year could, because the UK is, US is very extended and we are very cheap. So the elastic's been stretched very far. Positioning is very anti-UK already. Mm. I think it's difficult to see catalysts, but if the global economy picks up a little bit better than maybe the market's expecting, that will help the non-US side pick up. And then the tech bubble, or the sort of Magnificent Seven, those stocks are so expensive. Mm. So if there's any pullback there, then that might see a repositioning away from the US a little bit to other markets. I do think there's a high chance of that happening this year. So I'm hoping we're darkest before the dawn. The dawn might not be that bright, but I think it is coming.
And I kind of was looking at your UK income fund and like how it's had like such a great performance over the past 3 years. And maybe like what has been your best investment decisions that you've made over the past year?
Yeah, I think we tend to get sectors right and then pick it. So this year, or 24, banks were helpful. So being overweight things like Barclays, Standard Chartered, which were quite big positions, performed well. Our performance is more sort of avoiding too many disasters and getting a few things more right than wrong and trying to keep doing that on a sustainable basis. And it's not that straightforward, but we've managed to do that in the last 3 years. I think we've been more large cap, which mid cap's not been great. We can invest a little bit overseas. We can invest up to 20% overseas. That's added a bit of value in terms of stock selection. But there haven't been, I would say Barclays is probably one. If I had to pick a stock, that was the strongest performer for me last year. And over a 3 year period, I'd say probably banks, avoiding some of the big negatives on the staple side probably helped, but it's all bits and pieces.
Yeah. Well, and on that, the flip side of that would be, what's the pitfall that you feel you avoided or maybe you fell into?
I think, well, you always make mistakes. So 6 to 7 out of 10 is a good result. So yeah. I don't want to go through all my failures particularly.
Fair enough. But, that makes sense.
But I think things change. You've got to, you've got to be flexible and not too dogmatic in positioning. So I'm almost always prepared to change my views. That can be helpful. So. And that includes views on the market. But net, I think last 3 years, we were a bit more positive on growth than the market was. And we didn't have a recession, really, in the US. Some people were more defensive. We avoided some of the missteps in terms of mid-cap. And that's probably why we've done okay.
And of course, in terms of sort of investing in the last year, sustainable regulation, we've had in the last year, SDR. I wanted to ask you about that and where you see the regulator going with this, because more funds are getting labels. We seem to have been over the initial hump. but is there, do you think it's as simple as more funds will get labels, the FCA will get their way?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are delabeling actually, because the labels have become more onerous in terms of, they're talking about impact investing and etc. So I mean, because sustainability funds have performed poorly recently, and also the political agenda has been a little bit more problematic, particularly in the US, I would sort of say the zeitgeist has moved against ESG, and also the fund flow in the UK has become more circumspect because performance has been weak in that area. So I don't see a lot of pressure to become more sustainability orientated for the funds I'm exposed to. That may change, but I don't, if anything, I'd say people are focusing a little bit more on what's the best return and a little bit less outcome orientated in terms of non-profit areas.
And do you think that's kind of like a trend that's going to roll out through the rest of the year?
I think in the near term, I don't see that changing. I mean, Trump obviously is not pro, and this phrase green hushing as opposed to green washing is more common now. And so look, what we do with ESG is we look at governance, social, environmental risk to companies. How can we make money out of identifying risks to companies or benefits to companies and changes in environment, social, governance? So the funds I run, although we have sustainable funds which are different, but the funds I'm involved with personally are focused on beating the index and achieving good total return. But we use ESG to help me do that rather than push companies to
yeah.
on net zero and things like that. We still have a framework in terms of voting, but mm-hmm. It's more using ESG to help returns rather than push outcomes.
Interesting. And you, it's interesting you're saying the Zeitgeist, it's sort of moved past ESG because, you know, for a few, and it'd be interesting to get your perspective as someone who doesn't directly manage sustainable funds, although you have.
I'm not directly.
Because we would have people on these podcasts, I think, you know, in previous years who would rave about ESG and the Zeitgeist was very much for it.
And that was the case a couple of years ago.
So I'd just like to hear why you think that's not the case anymore. I mean, you mentioned Trump, obviously.
Yeah, well, I think it varies. Europe is still quite ESG-centric. And I'm not anti-ESG. I think it's important and it's still part of our toolkit in terms of investing.
Yeah.
But in the US, it's become a political football, the whole woke thing. And so people there... You can get into a situation where certain states don't like you not buying oil or whatever. So I think that's become a little bit more difficult. And then because performance of some of the sectors where ESG tended to be exposed to has been weaker, that's people tend to look at the performance return and say, well, there's a cost to this. So I think that's worked against ESG. Now, longer term, companies will try and do the right thing and we'll still be voting and encouraging them. But I think... In terms of fund flow, what we call impact investing, investing for particular outcomes around social issues or climate issues, that growth rate has definitely slowed relative to where it was a couple of years ago.
And you were saying that you talk a lot with clients on a regular basis. Mm. Has there been like any big concerns that they've had regarding the UK equity market over recent months?
Recent years, it's just mm-hmm. tended to lag the S&P 500. So yeah. I think the main, if that's the question, mm-hmm. in terms of clients, I mean, actually, UK did okay last year. The fund I run was just over 11% total return, so that's okay. But S&P obviously did better. Mm-hmm. So I think there's been this drift to global, drift to the US. That's where the cash flows have been, the retail sector in particular, in terms of retail customers. Because they felt they tend to follow where the money is. So that will change a bit like ESG when performance goes in the other direction. I happen to think that is likely to happen this year, but we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah. And just touching on affairs over the pond in the US, I just wanted to ask you whether you have concerns about Trump's tariff arrangements. And whether that's something that's an internal discussion going on. I imagine it must be, right?
Yeah, I mean, my insights are not going to be particularly different from consensus here, but I think the debate is, does he use tariffs as a sort of political football to say, do this or I'm going to hit tariffs, or is it a fiscal exercise where it's part of the policy? People are hoping that it's more, I won't hit Europe with tariffs as long as you spend more on defence and buy our oil sort of thing. China's a different situation. I think China's in the crosshairs, market's expecting that. I think tariffs are coming. It's a debate on how much, where and when. But I think he'll probably go pretty quickly. Most people are expecting him to announce tariffs like day one.
I mean, I guess with the UK market, tariffs from the US wouldn't impact as much as it would the EU market, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I do think the market's a little bit nervous about Trump. So my personal view is, if you look what's happened since he got elected, so Europe went down, US went up. So there is a chance that equalizes a little bit. It might not be quite as bad. And it might not be quite as good in the US, because valuations, again, mentioned before, so stretched. So I think we'll have to wait and see. But I don't expect any sort of shock and awe in Europe and the UK short term on tariffs. Mm-hmm. I think we know they're coming. Europe's preparing itself. China and the linkages through China is going to be more interesting. And politically, the dilemma for Europe and the UK is, How close do we want to stay to China without upsetting the US? China won't want to fight a war on two fronts either. So they want to, I assume, be okay with Europe and try and deal with the US rather than go for both of us. So that's going to be an interesting political dilemma to watch. But from a stock market perspective, valuations are low, optimism's not high. Quite a lot of this is priced in. And the other side of tariffs is obviously is cutting taxes, corporation tax, et cetera, et cetera. So that might provide a bit of stimulus in the US. That will help us as well, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll have to wait and see.
And I mean, you mentioned it a bit before as well about US exceptionalism. Yeah. That's been so high over recent years. Yeah. I mean, the Magnificent Seven has really outperformed the rest of kind of the market. Do you think that you have to prove more nowadays the opportunities that are in the UK market than before?
I'm too old to have to prove myself, I think, to be honest. But I think the clients are very S&P 500 focused because that's been so successful. So it would be nice if we start to see a bit of relative outperformance outside the US, frankly. I don't think so. I can't do anything apart from deliver good results relative to my benchmark, really. In terms of economic performance, it would be good if Europe, the UK and China got its act together, if you see what I mean. And I'd say the burden of potential is pretty low in that area, and the burden of potential is pretty high in the US. So I do think proving ourselves, but I do think people will feel more positive on Europe relative to the US at the end of this year than they did at the start. That's my general view, because things are not as bad as they're painted. And there are a few things that could work in Europe's favour, because you've got Ukraine, which most people expect now that will be resolved at some point this year. That's probably going to be helpful to Europe. You've still got interest rates coming down in Europe. You've got lower bond yields in Europe, lower cost of capital in Europe. Yeah. So there are things that are positive for Europe, and everything's been priced into the US. So, well, it's proving ourselves, I'm not sure, but I think there's asymmetric risk in our favour. In the next 12 months.
Yeah, I suppose.
Against the US.
But I suppose that's obviously not counting the volatility that Trump brings.
Yeah, that's true, but the volatility is bad for the, he brings volatility to his own market as well. So he's got to deal with debt ceilings. He's got bond yields that's 4.5% gilts. He's got fiscal deficits bigger than the UK's, and he's cutting taxes. Mm-hmm. They can get away with it to some extent because they're big economy, et cetera. But it's not without risk what's going on in the US. Political system's pretty polarized. You might struggle to get stuff through because he hasn't got much of a majority in the House of Representatives. So it's not, the assumption everything's going to go the US's way and Europe sort of is a loser. Mm-hmm. I would take issue with that a little bit.
I mean, you've had such a wide career around UK equities. I mean, you've seen quite a few things happening over the past years, whether it was kind of the economic crisis in 2008, then COVID. Where do you think we are in that cycle? And maybe where do you see the UK equity market being in the next 5 years?
5 years. crisis. The two big crises, I've been around, there was a crisis in 87 as well. There was a crash and US market fell 20% one day, actually. In 87, but and obviously the banking crisis in 2008, we're not in a crisis in that sense. Whether we're in a bubble in the US, because I do remember the tech bubble, there was a tech bubble in 2000, and there are quite a lot of similarities with that and what's happening in AI. So I think there's a risk of a bubble, but that's slightly different from, I don't think we've got an economic crisis. There are issues out there. There always have been. Debt to GDP is quite high. There's quite a lot of geopolitics going on. Social media's making things a little bit more polarized. These are all sort of issues. But economically, if I look at the UK, ex debt to GDP being a bit high, companies are in a good place, banks are well capitalized, P's are low, free cash flow is good, dividends are quite high, growing. That's all good. So I don't think crisis is the most used.
That makes sense. Well, thank you. I mean, that's a relatively positive note to end on, which we don't often do, David, right. On these. Yeah. We don't often do. But thank you so much for coming in and joining the podcast with us today.
Good pleasure.
You've been listening to The Wealth Show with myself, Zach Sharif, and Natalia Vaznier. Today, we were joined by David Cummings, Head of Equities at Newton Investment Management. For any questions, please feel free to email us at wmnews@citywire.co.uk. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Today is VE Day. The boys
the
are in.
The proud queen waves from the balcony.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has
tearing
landed.
Down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth: cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Capital at risk.